We're doing in Yaakov. We're up to page Samach in the standard editions, which is Daf Kuf Yud Tes in the Gemara. Amar Abaye, Abaye tot lo chareva Yerushalayim ela bishvil shechilelu ba'et haShabbat. Jerusalem was destroyed for no other reason than the desecration of Shabbos. As the Pasuk says, Umishabtotai elimu einehim v'achel b'tocham. Hashem says they ignored what was happening on my Shabbos, the desecration of my Shabbos. And that's why the fire began from within them. Amar Rabbi Avu, lo charva Yerushalayim, ela bishvil shebitlu kriyat shma shachrit v'arvit. Jerusalem was destroyed for no other reason than that people ceased to say Shema in the evening and in the morning. As the verse says, Hoy mashkimei v'boker shechar yirdofu. Woe to the people who get up early in the morning and they pursue their old wine. And then they wait until the late afternoon and they continue drinking wine. V'chtiv, and then the verse describes, V'aya chino v'nevel tof v'chalil v'yayin mishtehem. They have all these different music playing as they drink wine. V'tpo'al Hashem lo yabitu. And they don't take note of how, of what Hashem's doing in the world. What does that mean, they don't take note of Hashem? Means they don't take time to say Hashem is one. He's the one who created the world.
Has this did they all witness the destruction?
I didn't follow. No, these Amoraim are way past the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash. And the verse says, Lachen gala ami mibeli dat. So my nation has been exiled mibeli dat, because they don't recognize me, says Hashem. You guys got koach to be a little philosophical, or it's too late in the day, we should just move on?
It's fine. Go ahead.
Yeah, we have koch.
Uh-huh.
Okay. So, I was approached by a young man who said, can you answer why there are children who suffer? Because he spoke very harshly about how he doesn't see why one would believe that there is a world to come. And then he even alluded to his questioning of there being a judge, a creator. So, a big question deserves a big answer. But a big answer can't always be encapsulated into a two-minute conversation. So I asked him if he's really questioning, does he really want to know? And he said, yes. So I said, first of all, there's a good book called Job. Take some time and read it. Because the book of Job both dispels misconceptions and also lays the groundwork for some answer. I said, however, if you want, I'll give you at least a tool to approaching an answer. It won't be the answer, but I want to give you some tools that I wish someone would have given me at your age. Tool number one is, a question is not an answer. Sometimes we feel like if we have a good question, so then that disproves something. Well, a question isn't an answer. I said to him, I don't believe you exist. So does that make you not exist? Your existence or lack of existence is a fact irrespective of whether I believe it or not. So the fact that I can question whether you exist, whether you're a figment of my imagination, that's irrelevant. That doesn't change reality. Questions are not answers. Questions don't prove things. Questions are questions. They're important. We have to ask, but we shouldn't get confused that just because we have a good question, that means we have an answer. All we have is a good question. So if I question your existence, so then either you exist or don't exist, but my question doesn't affect whether you exist or don't exist. My question is my question, and your existence is totally separate from my question. So we have to realize that our questions don't really affect reality. They're important to us because we want to understand, but they're not really a proof one way or another. You have a good question, okay? You have a good question. We just read about the people who did not read Shema in the morning and in the evening. Rashi comments that people did not read Shema, it means they did not take the time, they were not focused, liyached Shemo al beriyotav, to declare Hashem's unity over His creation. The concept of Shema, the stress of Shema, is that God is one. The stress of Shema is there's a world where a lot of things are happening. And whether I have a good answer or I don't have a good answer, the declaration of Shema is that Hashem, who is one, is the source of everything that's happening in the world. But I have questions. But that doesn't change reality. So the declaration of Shema I said to him, imagine if you were a stranger and you walked into an operating room. Now, what would you say? You would say, that guy's crazy. Look at him, he's cutting someone apart, and then he's sticking in a needle into the person and strings into the person, and he's sewing him this way and that way. What's wrong with him? He's taking this out, he's taking that out, the guy's bleeding, stop him, right? From your perspective, that's what you're seeing. But is reality that, or is reality not that? It's irrelevant what you do and don't understand from what you're perceiving. We have to have that humility that as we watch something, we recognize that we're entitled to ask questions, we have to ask questions, but our questions don't affect reality. Our questions are an expression of what we think. It's important, I'm entitled, I have to. But it doesn't change reality. The man who's performing the operation could be saving his life. He could be the kindest person in the world, and you just don't understand what you're seeing. So you have a good question, that's true, but that doesn't change reality. So just we have to remember that when we approach things. I said to him, there are two approaches to this question. You can approach the question and say, I don't know if Judaism is true altogether. And then you say, well, then I don't understand why there's evil in the world. And from that approach to a question, then the only answer that I could offer you has to be a logical one. I can't talk about faith, I can't talk about Torah, I can't talk about tradition, I can talk about one thing, what makes sense. But there is a second approach to the question, which is, I know Hashem exists, I know Judaism is true, and I don't have answers as to why Hashem does certain things. That's a different approach to the question. And then I would, in part of the answer, I would tap into, well, what does Judaism teach me? If I trust Judaism to be true, if I trust Torah to be true, if I trust Hashem to be true, then the answers I'm given from there, well, they've already been given a basis. Those are two different approaches to the question. When we say Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, we're declaring Hashem is the source of everything. That doesn't mean I always have answers. That doesn't mean I have answers for everything that's happening. One guy raised his hand and says, why do we have a tailbone? Another guy, why do we have an appendix? Oh, so do I have all the answers? I don't have all the answers. But when I say Hashem Echad, what I'm saying is my question begins with a recognition that Hashem is one. there's a difference between a question that's starting at ground zero and a question that says no. There are certain things I know. The declaration of Shema, says Rashi, is Liyached Shemal Beriyotav. I say everything Hashem created is one source. That's my starting point. I'm laying down the starting point. And then I'll still have questions. Yes?
The middle set, though, I mean, it's good you mentioned that we still have Koach. But boom, you know, it's good stuff, but it's very, very heavy stuff you talk about, because it's not just the Shem, you know, to remind myself to say that, to think about it every time I say Shema is a whole other issue to say it. But not only the source of everything, but is ultimate Tov. That's what leads to that question.
We didn't get to that, right. That's where he was coming from, right.
And you know, the idea that evil exists is not such a big Yiddish. Adam Arisho found out that. But what the prophets always screamed about and what the Jewish commanded not to do is to be indifferent to evil. That's the biggest danger, I think, that people fall into. All of us sometimes. I mean, you know, you have to... it's an easier world if you don't let things get you too down, but there's a fine line between not getting too down and just being callous, which is, you know, but it's hard because, you know, the question that he asked you, it's a faith-based question, I think, to some degree, because if we were all powerful and we did everything good, forget about big deal things, everything good, but one day we didn't bother to stop a car from running over a child. We would think that the person is a terrible human being. And yet Hashem seems to be allowing that all the time. And today, if you're the Martian who's looking from above and you're seeing the surgeon cutting people up, you think it's crazy. But at least we get to see, the outcome of the surgery, and we kind of know some of it isn't. Here we don't see it. We don't know five fingers cloudy. I sure don't. You know, everything will even out. It's a faith-based thing. You know, I think it's logical to some extent. You know, it's like a parent wouldn't have children unless they're really sick, just to make them suffer and die. Hashem wouldn't make creatures not for our good. But it's a long, hard stuff, and it's great that you're bringing it up. I think it's good, but I think it's a lifetime process to keep. Is it?
I agree it's a lifetime worth of learning. And I agree that on some level...
No.
The Mishnah says we don't have a good handle on an answer. We have an answer, and it's not the way we'd like to have a grip on it.
That's a beautiful story, but some didn't keep going. But it's a great story. I love it. I think it's very inspirational. That, you know, as far as we see, by the way our earthly looks at things, you didn't, for all the bad things that would happen, you didn't say that this, you know, Skila, right? And you didn't say we'd watch our babies get crushed in walls or whatever. That's not the divine justice, right? But they still...
I don't know. Okay, I heard it now.
Yeah. It is a faith. It's a story. I like to, you know, it's tough stuff. You bring it up, and it's like saying, you know, you didn't say you didn't daven Shema more even, or you didn't say Birkat HaTorah. Obviously, it means more than you just didn't give lip service to these things. You didn't live with the recognition. What is it? That's a challenge. Big time.
Amar Rav Amnuna. Rav Amnuna taught, Lo Charva Yerushalayim, Jerusalem wasn't destroyed, Ela Bishvil, for no other reason than Shebitluba Tinokot Shel Beit Rabban. because they stopped the children from their studies. So the pasuk describes how Shneimar Shvoch Halolel Bachutz Matam Shvoch Mishum Dolel Bachutz. The Navi describes that they would pour Hashem's wrath against Jerusalem, and the reason is Olel Bachutz. The children were outside of their studies. So, on the one hand, this teaches us the importance of the kids studying. So one day I took my kids on a trip and someone asked me, what are you doing? I said, I'm giving them an educational trip. So he said, what about the fact that Jerusalem was destroyed because they stopped kids from learning? So I said to him, this is learning. Part of learning is also taking a break when you need it. If you're not taking a break, that's also learning. If you don't give them the breaks they need, then they're not going to be able to learn. This isn't called you're stopping them from learning. Stopping them from learning is when it's unnecessary. It's when out of laziness or convenience, a person stops his kids from learning. But if the kid needs a break, that's learning. That's part of you. You need to breathe. You need to eat. You need to play. So the kids need a break. So the Mishnah, nonetheless, the Gemara over here is telling us the gravity of the learning of the children, how important it is. Another angle. Jerusalem was destroyed for no other reason than people lacked shame from one another. Shenemar, as the verse says, the Navi Jeremiah tells them, Hovishu, you guys should be embarrassed, kitoivasu. The Navi tells them they've done things that are completely disgraceful. Gambosh lo yevoshu, however, the end of the pasuk says they're not embarrassed of what they've done. So when people aren't embarrassed of one another, so then society has a degenerative slope. If no one's embarrassed, then things just crumble. So I was very impressed. My son told me today that in their yeshiva, they gave them a speech and they said two fantastic thoughts. They said, number one, when we see someone do something wrong, so it harms us because we become desensitized. They spoke to them about the idea that there's some guy in the yeshiva who thinks it's humorous to cut the cord of the phone. They have a public pay phone, and some guy keeps cutting the cord. So the Mashgiach got up to speak, and he said, I want you guys to know, there's someone here that has a mental issue. There's something wrong with them. One guy. And I don't know who he is, but he's got a real problem. Because someone who cuts a phone cord so other people can't use the phone, he's got a problem. He said, however, why am I talking to you about it? Because we fixed the public payphone in Yeshiva twice this month. And it's cut again. And what I don't want should happen is that when we walk by and we see a cut payphone, so then it becomes normal to us. He said, it hurts all of us. So we have to return our sensitivities. And then I said to my son, that's genius. I said, you should know, you walk down the street, you see someone eat and drop their wrapper on the floor, whether you like it or not, you are just desensitized to hurting public domain. Right, wrong, but it affects us. And then the Mashgiach told them a second line. He said to them, he was quoting someone, I don't know who, he said, when we choose to judge someone favorably, we're doing it more for our benefit than theirs. When you see someone doing something wrong and you walk away thinking, oh my gosh, look at what they did. So part of what happens is we are desensitized because we saw someone doing something wrong. But if in our mind we give a good excuse, it must be they did it because of A. It must be because of B. So then we help ourselves not be desensitized by what we've seen done wrong. So I was very impressed that second line also. Yeah.
I heard that Hashem stopped Tzarat because there's no shame. People didn't care. So when I talk about, you know, it's not in the house, whatever, you know, so it took it away. It wasn't helping anymore. I know from my own life, You know, I remember in New York in the 70s, well, if I smoke, I won't smell all the urine in the subways and this and that. And, you know, you don't like to get the, see people lying in the street. And you know, after a while, you know, it's become callous. You lose sensitivity and you can't just turn it on when you should have it.
Yeah.
It makes it an easier world to function, but you function on a low level. So is that trade-off.
So that's what Ula says, that was the cause of the destruction of Jerusalem. People didn't have shame. Amar Rav Yitzchak, lo charva Yerushalayim, ela bishvil sheyeshvu katan vegadol, shnemar vayakam kohen v'chtiv batrei hibok tibok haaretz. The reason Jerusalem was destroyed, says Rabbi Yitzchak, because people equated the big and the small. And so when people make everyone's equal, so then that brought about the destruction of Jerusalem. There's a Gemara in Sota that says that things have reached an age of sycophants where no one really knows who's great because everyone gets complimented nonstop. So when they say this one's so big and that one's so big and that one's so big, so no one knows who's big. You just don't know. אמר רב אמרם ברי דרב שמעון ברבא אמר רב שמעון ברבא אמר רבי חנינה לא חרבה ירושלים אלא בשביל שלא הוכיחו זה את זה. Jerusalem was destroyed for no other reason than that people did not correct one another. שנאמר היו שרי החיילים לא מצאו מראה. The verse in Lamentations in Eicha says that the leaders were like rams who would not find a place to graze. So מה היה על זה ראשו של זה בצד זנבו של זה. Rams, when they go like a herd one after the other. One's head is by the tails of the others. אף ישרש באותו הדור כפשו פניהם בקרקב להוכיחו זה את זה. That's what happened in that generation. One followed the other. The leaders have a responsibility to correct one another. If you see a fellow leader doing something wrong, your responsibility is to call him over and talk to him. That's why you're both leaders. So you could tell him, hey, this is wrong. But they didn't. They didn't, so that brought about the destruction. People would not rebuke one another, meaning in the leadership, there's a responsibility to call someone over and say, I'm sorry, you're wrong. אמר רב יהודה, לא חרבה ירושלים, אלא בשביל שביזו בה תלמידי חכמים. Jerusalem was destroyed for no other reason than that people put down the Talmidei Chachamim. They mocked them, as the Pasuk says, "V'yu malivim b'malachei Elokim uvozim dvarav umtatim b'nviyav adalot chimat Hashem b'amod ein marpeh." People shamed the angels of Hashem. That's a reference to the Talmidei Chachamim. And when they put them down, it says Hashem's anger came up ad le'ein marpeh, to the point where there was no cure. What does that mean? אמר ויהודה מרב כל המבזה תלמיד חכם אין לו רפואה למכתו. רבי יהודה said, in the name of Rav, when someone shames a תלמיד חכם, there is no cure to their wound. There is no cure. אין לו רפואה למכתו. It's as though they get hit with illness that there is no cure for. Wow, scary. Scary. אמר רב יהודה אמר רב, רב יהודה quoted in the name of Rav, מהי דכתיב, what does the verse mean? אל תגאו במשיחי, over here it says, ולין ויהי אל תראו. אל תגאו במשיחי, the Navi says, don't touch my anointed ones. אלו תינוקות של בית רבן. These are the youngsters who are learning, it's as though they're nursing by their teachers. So, that's why they're called Mishichai, those who are anointed, because when children are younger, so customarily people would anoint them with oil. It's interesting. I have a friend who had fertility issues. And he went to an alternative medicine doctor, and this doctor told him that one of the major health issues that people have is because they use shampoo. He said that people in the showers, they take the shampoo when it's not yet watered down. They put it straight on their scalp on the fontanelle. And he claimed that this is one of the causes for all kinds of health issues that people have. people shouldn't put shampoo directly on their scalp. At least they should dilute it with water before they put it on their head. Okay, but then he said, the better way to shower is to use olive oil. Instead of using soap, clean your head with olive oil. So I decided I'm going to try it. So I went a week or two just using olive oil to clean my head. And it was shocking because you'd think, what does olive oil clean? But it did. It did. It worked. Very interesting. So coming back to here, the children are called mishichai. Today, people would often put oil when you make a child a bath. So very often people put in oil in the bath. In ancient times, you used to smear kids with oil. So that's why the children are called mishichai. The term mashiach means one anointed with oil. Belinviyai al tareu, elu talmidei chachamim. When the pasuk says nevi'ai, so nevi'ai is a reference to the talmidei chachamim, because the word navi could mean prophet, but the word navi could also mean one who says over. So linvi'ai al tareu. Amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah. Reish Lakish quotes Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah. Now Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah was the grandson of Rabbi. He was in Amora. En olam mitkayem ela bishvil hevel tinokot shel bet Rabban. What keeps the world going is the breath of the children who are learning. Them, as they're breathing, as they're learning Torah, that's what keeps the world around. Amar li Rav Papa la Abaye. Didi vedidach mai. Rav Papa, who was a disciple of Rava, he said to Abaye, what does our learning, it has no value? What does that mean? How come only their learning keeps the world going? Amale Abaye answered him, Eino dome hevel sheyesh bochet lehevel sheein bochet. You can't compare learning Torah, the breathing of someone who's tasted transgression, to someone who never has transgressed. Children are pure. So this is a beautiful approach to children. What do you mean? They're not mischievous. They're not sinning. When a child's being mischievous, that's not a transgression. That's him being a child. That's fine. Ba'amar Reish Lakish Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah, we have another quote, En mevatlin tinokot shebet Rabban afilu lebinyan Beit HaMikdash. We don't stop the children's learning even for the building of the Beit HaMikdash. Children's learning, we view that as one of the most precious things on the planet. So even if we need help to build the Beit HaMikdash, we don't get the kids in on it. We deal without them. So here again comes back what we discussed earlier tonight. Certain things are necessities. Children need to go on trips. Children need to have fun. Children need breaks. That's part of their learning. Amar Reish Lakish Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah. Reish Lakish said to Rabbi Yehuda Nesiyah, Kach mekublani ma'avotai. I have the following tradition from my forefathers. V'amila ma'avotecha. And others quoted that he said, I have the following tradition from your forefathers. Kol ir she'en ba tinokot shel Beit Rabban machrivin otam. Any city that doesn't have children learning, we destroy it. Ravina ma machrivin otam. Ravina said, no, we ostracize them. We place a boycott against them. So a city has a responsibility to have a place for the children to learn. That's our tradition. This is even quoted in Halacha. Again, here we see how important it is to ensure that we have children learning. I heard once a class, I think, by Rav Yitzchak Yosef. He said that in Tel Aviv they had beautiful shuls, and they had excellent gabbayim who would keep the shuls locked to keep them in their pristine state. And so Tel Aviv, unfortunately, ended up with very little amount of people who are learning Torah. Whereas initially, if you go back 50 years ago, Tel Aviv was bustling with Torah. Every corner had a shul. People were very Torah observant. However, the shuls were kept beautiful. In Jerusalem, he said, the shuls didn't have locks. They always kept the shuls open. The children kept coming in and learning. The shuls in Jerusalem, they're nowhere near the beauty of Tel Aviv. But they were used for the children, to help the children grow. And that's why in Jerusalem, things kept growing in their level of knowledge and observance. Jerusalem kept evolving in the right direction. V'amarava ravatot, lo charava Yerushalayim ela bishvil shepasku mimena anshei amana. Jerusalem was destroyed because there ceased to be people of faith. Shenemar, as the verse says, Shotetuv chutzot Yerushalayim uru nau de'u. Go, look through the markets of Jerusalem. Pay attention and see. Im yesh oseh mishpat mevakesh emunah. Is there anyone in Jerusalem who is being just? Is there anyone who seeks truth? So the concept of anshei amanah, people who can be trusted, people who are trustworthy people, that ceased to be in Jerusalem. Ini, is that so? V'amar Rav Ketina afilu b'shat kishlona sheyushlaim lo pasku min anshei amanah. Rav Ketina said, even in the worst moment, as Jerusalem was stumbling, there continued to be trusted people, as the pasuk says, ki tfos ish b'achiv bet aviv lemor, simla lecha katzin tiye lanu. The one person, it says, will tell another, I'll give you the leadership. You wear the royal clothing. You be the general. Lead us to war. Things were going to be so dire with the destruction that one would tell the other, you be the general. Just lead. Tell us how to go. דברים שבני אדם מתכסים בהם כשמלה ישנן תחת ידיך והמכשלה הזאת תחת ידיך דברים שהם בני אדם עומדים לעיני להם כנכשלים בהם ישנן תחת ידיך קצין תהיה לנו. So the Talmud analyzes it as follows. When he tells him, you have the garment, you be the leader. So he's telling him, when people ask you a Torah, you have the garment, so to speak. The garment over here is a metaphor for Torah. So the idea is, just like a garment covers a person, so too there are questions that when you ask people, so to speak, they cover their mouths. They say, I don't know. So when they tell him, you be the general, they're telling him, you know what other people have under covers. In other words, other people don't know. When you ask other people the questions, they don't know the answer, but you do. Then they say, you be the leader, because amachshela hazot, things that other people stumble on, that people try to figure out what's the correct halacha, and they keep making mistakes, but you got it right. So you be the leader. So the Navi is describing, the Gemara is saying, that even at the time of our destruction, people turned to those who were learned in Torah and said, you be the leader. So that means even at that time, there were anshei amanah, people of faith. What will the person say? The Talmud says, what will the man respond? It says in the verse, the man will tell him, I have no bread. I can't be your leader. So the Talmud says, what does that mean? He'll say, I have no bread. He will say, I don't know. You guys think I know Torah. To you, it seems like I know Torah. I don't know Torah. I can't be your leader. So the Talmud's saying, how can you say that there ceased to be trustworthy people in Jerusalem? Here you see, even at the time of Jerusalem's destruction, people are so honest that a person says, I don't know. You guys think I know Torah. I don't know. Says the Gemara, Dim Shaniatam Diamalu Agmarinu Amalei Eimalan. How do you know over there it's because he's trustworthy? He knows that if he takes the leadership, they'll start asking him questions and he won't know the answer. That, says the Gemara, doesn't prove there were always trustworthy people. So the Gemara says, the Gemara says, that's not true. Because if they'd ask him, he could always say, I forgot. When a person says at the onset, I don't know, he's being honest. Don't tell me he was scared of getting caught. Because getting caught, he could have said, I forgot. Answers the Gemara. The Gemara says, you're right. When it comes to Torah, there were always honest people among Jerusalem. What we're saying here is, there stopped being honest people in business. Jerusalem was destroyed because there ceased to be honest people doing business. That's the anshei amanah we're talking about. Okay, we'll pick up here, Bezrat Hashem, next week.